From the Art Center in Carrboro, this is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, a program that has fascinating guests, lively talk and conversation, community news, storytelling, and a look at our local entertainment scene. Good radio and always a few surprises. Now here's Claudio.
And just when you thought it was going to be safe to get back in the water, the Speakeasy Sharks are back. Good morning, folks, and thank you for tuning in. We've got a house full of all kinds of cards this morning. Got Rob Underhill, director Rob Underhill, who's going to be joining us. Also executive producer Will Williams, executive producer and police officer Robert Wagner. We're going to be discussing the films No Child and Braggin' East. I've got Bob Crowley here soaking some info from Rocco to be co-host occasional, or the occasional foil, and of course Rocco himself, and this is yours truly, Claudio. In a few minutes after we play a little jazz just to set the morning off, we'll be bringing these guys on, and we're going to dive headlong into the creativity of film. Thank you for joining us.
My name is Jim Gray, and I am a judge of the Superior Court in California. Did you know that since the federal government first banned marijuana in 1937, that usage in this country has gone up by about 4,000%? Or that an American is arrested on marijuana charges every 38 seconds? If you are wondering if any of this makes sense, you are not alone. To find out more, contact the Marijuana Policy Project at 1-877-JOIN-MPP or visit them on the web at mpp.org.
WCOM is made possible by our underwriters, contributors, and volunteers. Good Radio on Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Community Radio, WCOM. Now back to Claudio.
And this is Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater. I think I'm going to start the morning with director Rob Underhill to catch me up on some of the most recent film projects. I know you've had a couple of premieres that I was unable to attend due to my father's recent death. but catch us up. What's going on in your world?
Absolutely, Claudio. So we've had a couple of recent previous screenings. One was for Bragging East, which of course we'll be talking about today,
right.
Police drama. And also we had a previous screening, this is all at the Living Arts College in Raleigh, the previous screening of Fever Dreams, which is a kind of Twilight Zone meets Tales from the Crypt
right.
sort of TV series we've been developing. And so we showed two complete episodes and a partial episode. And then that will, as a package, be world premiering in Dubuque, Iowa, at a really fantastic film
wow.
festival up there. So we're looking forward to that. That'll be in April.
Fantastic. So how was the reception?
Oh, great. We
yeah,
had a
good.
Packed house. I mean, we just sent out invites. We got, of course, the cast and crew to come. But then we had a lot of folks from the filmmaking community that wanted to come out and support it and check it out. Had tremendous positive feedback from all the work that we presented.
Fantastic. And, of course, we've got the Full Frame Film Festival coming up here at the Carolina Theater. I'm actually going to be working it. And I know at some point, hopefully sometime in the not-too-distant future, you're going to be introducing a documentary of your own into that festival.
That is correct. And we're just getting underway with development for Box Brown, the documentary. We've been working on the narrative film, and then we switched gears. We've done all the hardest part, which is all the historic scenes, reenactments already. And so we wanted to go ahead and start doing interviews to do the documentary. So it'll be a feature length. We hope to world premiere it at the film studies over at the Full Frame Film Festival. Not this time, of course, but this coming year.
What is that story about? Give us a scoop.
Oh, absolutely. So Henry Box Brown is a true story about a Virginian slave that mailed himself to freedom in 1849, and so he was packaged up, sent from Richmond to abolitionist home in Philadelphia. And then, of course, he started going on tour to tell a story. And so we are taking that story and telling it. And a lot of folks don't know it these days. And we thought it was, at the time, of course, it was a huge abolitionist story. And so we want to sort of use that as an introduction to a new generation of folks into understanding what slavery was about and
sure.
its effect on people.
Interesting. So in order to turn that into a documentary, you must have actually pursued some people that were directly or indirectly connected to this.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a lot of folks involved with these kind of studies at Duke and UNC. So we've got a huge a mecca of historians and professors and other folks that can provide really wonderful interviews to make this documentary successful in reaching people.
Fantastic. And so it's already well underway from
what
you're saying.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Good. Well, I hope to see you at that Full Frame. I want to introduce Will Williams, who wrote No Child. I think that's a working title at this point. But give us a little bit of a scoop on you. I understand you're from the Outer Banks area. How about filling us in on that?
Yeah, I grew up in Edenton, North Carolina. Came to Raleigh about 4 years ago. Fell in love with writing and acting and been working with Rob here on our film No Child, which is currently in post-production.
Indeed. I've always wondered how somebody could leave the ocean and come inland and actually find an acceptable situation on land.
Yeah, well, I try to get back there as much as possible.
Oh, good, so. good. Got to go for the cue, because I know I still occasionally, when I get a call to come and chef at sea, man, I'm gone. Where's Claudio? So how's the production going, No Child? I know I was part of it, but I haven't been keeping up with lately, so anything you'd like to convey, please do.
Sure, I'd say it's going really, it's one of those projects, well, every project seems to start with high expectations, and I've been blessed to work with projects that reach kind of a height of excellency that I couldn't even have anticipated. And No Child is no exception. We've got just a wonderful score composer working on the score. We've got
Fantastic.
A lot of preliminary work done on that. And we've got a full rough cut of the whole feature. So it's approximate 45-minute running time. So it's a featurette, you might call it.
Wow, okay.
And at first, we talked about doing a 10-minute film.
I know, and then I thought it was going to be 20.
And, you
know, essentially, it's a short story that Will Williams wrote.
That's right. And then it kind of just blew up into this bigger piece. And so
yeah.
we're really excited to
Fantastic.
Looking forward to sharing it.
So it's going to actually, are you going to present it with another work or by itself?
It'll be, it'll definitely tour by itself. We do hope to use that to continue to promote and secure other types of films that also promote social positive change.
Right.
And that's, of course, what this one does. No Child is...
Based on the No Child Left Behind.
It's got those elements, yeah. And it's also a story about a person overcoming their own demons and becoming an adult. So No Child is in... You know, time to grow up and become a positive member and role model.
Gotcha. And, of course, you put me in the film as the ultimate demon, Hemingway, given to his drinking excesses and so on. But it was a great part. I really enjoyed playing with Will Williams.
Oh, you did a great job. I thought you guys were tremendous in the scene, and I'm looking forward to
it. It's very rare that you can walk on the set and immediately, without even speaking before you go on film and act, and have the kind of chemistry that Will and I had. I mean, it was an immediate connection. Absolutely. Total support system, which I love falling into. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So just very quickly to bounce onto Bragg and East, which we'll bring into the picture a little later, why don't you give us a scoop as to what exactly that is? So we'll come back to you in a little bit as well.
All right, Bragg and
this
East.
Is Robert Wagner.
Bragg and East is it's a faith-based film that follows the life of a criminal and a cop and how they get hardened by the streets. And through their hardness, the officer finds a way of reaching the community and reaching people in a different way, and that's through love. Instead of taking the aggressive approach, he takes a different approach, and through that love that he starts to sow into the community, there reaps rewards and change.
So. It's a beautiful premise. I've seen the preview. Regrettably, I was not able to make the premiere, but how did you find out about Rob Underhill to get him to do the film?
Well, me and Rob, we worked on something way, way back, and it was kind of funny at the time that we were still in the concept of this. We bumped into each other and found out we actually lived at the same apartment complex as each other at one time, and we just kept
just being
talking
in Raleigh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, sir. So we just kind of kept talking about it, and I know that some of the projects he's been working on really like the community aspect and the positive sides of life, and it was something that he just fell in love with himself. So
you're both on a mission of sorts, and I really think that's the noble way to go about the film industry anyway, make it about the people. And things that we need to be more connected to, because God knows we're floating around in a strange wheelbarrow these days. So anyway, back to you, Rob. What's Hanging Fire? You also said you premiered at the School of the Arts. Give us a little background on the School of the Arts itself.
Sure. As far as the Living Arts College goes,
please.
We've kind of established a relationship with them for some time. Regrettably, our producer and cinematographer Arvind Ragapathy can't join us, but he's forged this really wonderful relationship with the Living Arts College, and over the years we've shown a number of works, and they've been proud to have us there, and we've been proud to have them host us, they have a wonderful full theater,
and they're actually set up for this particular medium as well.
Oh yeah.
Because I did the narration for Rusty Bucket Kids, not realizing at the time they had me in. I just thought I was going to go in front of a mic and do the narration. They had an entire class watching me. So yeah, I had no idea I was the educator for the moment at the time.
They do have a tremendous program there for film students, for editing, for shooting, for whatever. And it's great to give them a little bit of exposure to a professionally completed project. And then it's great for us to exhibit there because they have a wonderful theater for
it. Right. And also state-of-the-art equipment.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So it's a great place for you definitely to be connected with. So back to Will Williams. What inspired you to the craft of writing this particular story? What moved you in that direction?
Well, it was definitely...
The story being No Child.
What inspired me was what I was going through personally. The main character in the story, Will, is battling some of the things that I battled a few years ago as far as getting out of college, trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, and feeling that I needed to just find a job, and once I found a job, I'd be happy. But instead, it's more about finding your passion and pursuing that.
Finding your coming to center on certain levels, discovering yourself. And of course, you transformed your character into that of the little boy in the story. And you're the mentor. So, like talking to the inner child, I like that concept.
But in a way, the child kind of becomes his mentor.
Yes.
Because through teaching the child something that is powerful and important to himself, as he sees Timmy Richardson plays the role of Thomas in the movie, a wonderful 8-year-old actor, as he sees a little boy getting it, he starts getting his own fires reignited about what was exciting to him about literature and learning. And maybe he's kind of chosen the wrong career path based on, what should he do as a career, doing money? How is he supposed to be, quote-unquote, happy? Or should he be pursuing something he loves, and could he make a living doing that, possibly? So it kind of opens up all the doors to possibilities through this relationship he's forged with you know, an 8-year-old boy.
Right. So exploring the inner angst and somehow coming to the light with it.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And it's a beautiful story. The concept of it is, I can't wait to see how you've edited the film together.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things where you just can't wait to show it, and I would just start showing it now because I get so excited about things I work on. But you also, when you show something, it's not complete. People get that stuck in their minds, so of course mm-hmm. you wait until it's perfect.
Yeah, and I understand you're already getting some commentary back from Bragg and East, right? There's already I heard you mention very. I'm going to go over to you very quickly, Robert Wagner. You mentioned something about somebody responding to the preview of the film, or did they come to the premiere?
We actually, you know, through some of the news releases, WREL mm-hmm. did a thing with Tar Heel Travelers. That had gotten out there, and the word about community outreach and the program that we're trying to do behind the scenes of the film really reached the hearts of people. There was one lady who got up with me from Nashville who had said that she has, because of this, it's motivated her to speak to her pastor about wanting to start a ministry at the jail and wanting to help other people that have been sexually assaulted like herself.
And you said she herself was, yeah.
Yeah, and she's wanting to now reach out into her own community up in Nashville, North Carolina, to do things. And likewise, I had a church contact me that said that that's right there on Bragg Street where we filmed, mm-hmm. said that they saw that, and it's now motivated them as a church to start walking their community and getting out in that same community to start serving the people in their community. So it's really starting, it's really motivating people.
You're sowing a good seed.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, why don't we go to a little music, take a breather, and then we'll come back at you.
Community Radio for Chapel Hill and Carborough. You're listening to 103.5 FM, WCOM.
Would it be crazy if you packed your bags and left for a week, a month, a year? What if you left for 2 years? What if you were going far away to help in a village on the edge of the Gobi Desert? To spend time with people the rest of the world only reads about? To teach children and learn a thing or two about yourself? Would that be crazy? Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
You're tuned to your community radio station, 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
Your time is important. That's why we thank you for taking us along. We're WCOM, Community Radio. Now back to Claudio.
And we're back. I think what I'm going to do is get all the chaps in here to give us a little bio about themselves so we can understand where these unique emergences came from. Rob Underhill, beginning with you, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. So I guess since 2005, I've been a filmmaker. I love to direct, write, produce, all of the above.
May I ask what inspired that? And then we'll go back into your
background.
Sure.
Well, I've always been a writer. And when I got to North Carolina back in 97, I helped form the first ever drama club at Wake Tech.
From where?
I grew up in Williamston, Michigan.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And spent my first 22 years there. Came here and helped form the first drama club, got to be president for a couple of years, got to see something I wrote become a play, and that's where I got the bug from.
I did it. I got you.
I did theater for about 6 years. Then about 2005, I started going solely into film and media and promos and any of that kind of stuff. But my main love is narrative film.
Right.
And so I've been doing that for some years now, and I've gotten to do about 5 features, bazillion shorts, lots of promos, music videos, that sort of thing. And I definitely encourage folks that want to get involved with the community production scene to connect with me on Facebook. I'm at Rob Underhill Productions on Facebook. And you can also reach me through robunderhill.com.
Let's go back a little further into your younger days the home place. Give us a little background as to what first triggered you in the direction that you followed.
Wow. Well, my mom is an uber creative type who would get really good at something like painting and then stop. Then she'd be really good at writing novels and stop. Then she was a pilgrim for a while. She made her own soap, did all this kind of stuff. So I got this powerful creative gene inside me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say my dad is a little bit more of the worker guy, the guy who's always had the kind of 9-to-5 job, organized kind of in that fashion kind of person. So I think maybe I merged the two genes together.
And, could be.
So I've become very organized and focused on this art form. But at the same time, film is kind of like this composition of many arts. And that's so in a way, that's kind of my mom's gene.
Very
speaking.
Much so.
And so I found a way to focus that interesting creative energy into a single kind of art.
Now, I noticed that you said your mom would take on a challenge, follow the medium, and then at some point stop.
Yeah, she'd get pretty good, and then she'd stop.
Okay, so you don't, in a sense, I don't think you feel like she actually took it to completion. She just sort of lost the feel of the challenge, or what was the reason she went on to something else? Was it because she was a mother and you guys were too blooming distracting, or what was it?
I know that was challenging, especially myself. I was I would say I wasn't too hard to raise, but there was 4 of us, and there's a lot of stuff to do, of course, you know, driving everyone everywhere, being at everyone's performance. You know, my parents were very active in supporting us in our arts. And
I would have to say one thing in defense of parents right off, just knowing myself, the creative types ask a million questions a day, so
yeah, high maintenance, definitely high maintenance. Definitely. I was one of those kids. I had to know a little bit about everything.
Yes.
So I, in a way, I've always been kind of a jack of trades, and that sort of roots from all that experience. But you know, I think I had a wonderful education at Williamson High School. It was top rated high school for you know lectures and real connectivity and a real sport of arts, which is kind of lacking in today's schools. Not because of interest, but because of finances and things like that.
Very much so, yeah.
So I was kind of spoiled. I was back in a time, you know, 93 is when I graduated, and my school happened to have really strong supports of the arts, and that helped develop me too artistically.
No doubt. Now, were you a kid that loved comics, or what were some of your passions that drew you into the spectrum early on?
Well, I've always been a big fan of fantasy. I played the pen and paper, Dungeons and Dragons.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
My older brother got me hooked on that. So I've always loved fantasy. I love Game of Thrones, which new season's coming out. Pretty excited. But I would say that I also play a lot of games. Like, I love computer games.
Mm.
And so writing for me, though, was more of the – at first it was kind of my access to the fantasy world in my own mind.
Mm-hmm.
But then it became a wonderful way to tell stories or live lives that I can live at the time. You know, dreaming of being able to drive or, you know, have my own place. And then, of course, then I reached those times when I could do those things, and then I just kept the vehicle going. I just really enjoyed telling stories. So that's where it all comes from for me.
Where was the first film experience?
The first film I did? The first one I was really proud of was 2005. I partnered with Arvind Raghupathy for the first time.
And how did you guys meet?
It was at a music video. And then we met, and he showed me his portfolio. It was very professional. He always is. Mm-hmm. Even when I was just a novice.
No doubt.
He was being super professional. And I got him excited about me and my social networking skills, you know, bringing people together. And he got me excited about his skill with cinematography. And we decided to do Move Carry, which is our first 30-minute short we did. And I just love the piece to this day. And that got me really started on doing filmmaking.
Tell us something about the piece.
Move Carry is kind of a psychological romance. It's a little bit of a dark story, but it's also about human relationships. And it's about these two roommates, both female, who had a little problem with a guy. And one of them's come back to reclaim her stuff when the other one went kind of psychotic.
Oh.
So it's an interesting story, but it's visually very stimulating, and that got me really excited about the whole medium of film, because before that I'd done theater for 6 years. Mm-hmm. So I just love telling a visual
story. Oh, you came from
a
great background.
Yeah,
perfect.
Absolutely.
I've got to plug the theater background. That's my own. Will, we're going to bounce over to you. Give us your background from the coast.
Well, originally from Edenton, North Carolina, and my background, I actually have a sports background. I never really pursued anything artistic. My sister and my mother, they both have the artistic nature, and my father, he was sports background, so all growing up, that's all I cared about was sports.
What kind of sports in particular?
Well, when I was younger, I played everything. When I got to high school, I narrowed it down to soccer and golf. I really fell in love
with soccer, my man, all right.
I really fell in love with golf, and I ended up playing college golf at Mount Olive College. And you know, my sister, she was a painter, still is, and I never really pursued that. And then I found, after I got out of college, I found how therapeutic writing is. And
yeah, I can second
and
that.
What Rob was saying about his mother kind of reminds me of myself. I always would do something, get good at it, like a sport. And then before I got to where I was really good, I would give it all up and try something different.
So you didn't take it to its heights, and I can say that of myself as well early on.
Right. So it was kind of, it was almost like the hype of getting to that level, and then I would just burn out. But what I found with writing and everything is when you write and create the story and that story's over, you can start a fresh new one after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there is no burnout.
And I think, you know, I think the most refreshing element of it is how deep you have to dig into your own psyche to put these words on the page, to reveal your character, really. It's almost like knowing that when you have a dream, the famous psychologist, I think Jung, said, always bear in mind whenever you dream that everybody in the dream is you. And the same goes into the craft of writing. You are all those characters. They are all a reflection of you, no matter how dark, no matter how light, no matter what, whether you hold them in contempt or whether you love the character, they're all aspects of you that you're putting on the page. Because I found myself creating characters and weeping at their tragedy while I was writing, because that's where the story was meant to go, and getting incredibly emotional. If anybody had walked into the room, they'd have thought I was nuts. But I don't let people come into the room when I'm doing that, so I was safe. But I just wanted to add that to it, because I know there's a lot that goes into writing, and I know that's the reason the therapy's in it. Because you have to face yourself and your demons.
Right.
And, of course, your story, No Child, deals pretty intensely with that.
That's right.
So back to your own background as far as where you came from and how you wound up here.
Well, after college, I moved to Raleigh, North Carolina, and started working in corporate environment, and that's kind of where the No Child inspiration came from, because that's the same thing Will is looking to do when he gets out of college. And I faced, when I got into that environment, I said, you know, is this really going to be what makes me happy, or is it going to be if I just pursue my passions, which wasn't the corporate environment.
I can see that. It's not the destination, it's the journey anyway in life. But I think finding your true calling and then following that North Star as best you can, protecting your joy as best you can along the way, that's what it's all about. Ultimately, that's what we're here for, in my translation of it. So what brought you up from the coast in particular?
Well, it's kind of funny. All of my friends went to North Carolina State University, and I went to a small private college, and they were all saying, you know, Raleigh's great. Raleigh's great. You need to move here and be with us. So
they're saying that to everybody, though, man. Yeah, people have got to stop coming.
I know. So I said, you know what? You're right. I'm gonna move to Raleigh with you guys. And as soon as I moved to Raleigh, they all start moving back to where I moved from, and or moving somewhere else. So now it's myself and a few others that stay. But
I'm waiting until they all get here. Then I'm gonna figure out where I left, and that's where I'm moving. Anyway, so you and then how did you and Rob connect?
Well, I met Rob on one of his previous films, Box Brown, and after that, you know, I knew about the quality of his work and his reputation. I contacted him, definitely wanted to work with him.
So you hadn't actually met in person before, you contacted indirectly? For example, you and I met on LinkedIn. How did you connect? Or you did meet in person. I'm sorry.
I would say it was very brief. It was definitely very brief. It's kind of one of those handshakes, and he said something like, I've got the project for you. Uh-huh. So, okay, I hear that every day, but right. I'll look forward to seeing that. But it was part of Box Brown. It was our climatic last big theater scene where Henry Box Brown's telling the story to a theater full of abolitionists. So we did it at the historic theater here in UNC, the old Playmakers Theater.
Okay, gotcha.
Which was built in 1851, which is whereabouts when he would have done the speech for real. So it was cool to use that space and to have people in all the historic garb. And Will was one of them. We had him all dressed up with the top hat. And he came up to me and said, I've got the story for you. And I said, all right, we'll meet up and talk about it. And we did. And then that was almost a full year ago. And we've been working on this No Child project ever since.
And here's a lifetime friendship. Perfect. All right, time to move over to Mr. Bragging East Police Officer Robert Wagner, not the Robert Wagner with Natalie Wood, just in case any of you were wondering.
Which is the only
He's not
going to
explain
float,
the
right?
disappearance of Natalie, right? But he is going to go into his own background. Give us the scoop as to where you come from and how you wound up here. And I want you to get to that story about the baby as you proceed.
Definitely. I was born in Somerset, New Jersey. Wow. My family's from up there.
I wouldn't have guessed that with you. You have an accent and a tone that is, you could be California anyway.
Yeah, we moved down in the first grade.
Ah, okay,
that's
gotcha.
Probably why. We moved to New Bern, North Carolina. Growing up, my father was a pastor.
We're all ghosts from the coast. Sorry.
My father was a pastor. He was actually my youth pastor growing up, and I first started in the arts with a church called Faith United Methodist Church. They did this huge stage play called The Promise every year, and that was probably my hook into the arts. I just fell in love with it, was in it every year, sometimes tried to play multiple characters if I could. And then from there, my father became a pastor. We went down to Carteret County, down to Beaufort area, where he was a pastor at a church called Court Creek.
What denomination?
Methodist.
Methodist.
Methodist, okay. Yep. Then we started up a non-denominational church, went back to New Bern, called the Father's House, and I became the music minister. So I always played the piano and sang for the church. And then I kind of followed him around and got married to a wonderful woman. I met her at the Waffle House.
All right.
Yeah, I figured if I could show up at 3 o'clock in the morning and meet a woman at the Waffle House who works there, who still has all her teeth, she's worth keeping.
So anyway. I hope she's not listening.
So we got married, and I've just had a great support system, just wanting to get into the industry.
Now, did you go into writing and creating as well, or did you do more performing other people's works?
I started off doing the acting, and then I said, you know, I like to dive in. If I get into something, I just want to dive into it. So we started trying to dabble with behind-the-scenes stuff. I think one of the first biggest things I worked on was a film called Southern Belle, starring Anna Faris. That shot down in Wilmington. I was just an office production assistant, and the director was actually looking for a song for her to sing in a church scene, Anna Faris. And I was like, well, I got this crummy CD we made with some of the music that we play at church that I wrote. And sure enough, they picked a song, and gets to sing the – she butchered it, which is what she's supposed to do, but she got to sing the song on the movie, which has done pretty well.
Fantastic. Congratulations on that. So writing was part of the craft.
Yeah.
And, of course, a strong, from what I'm gathering, you're a you have a bit of a missionary presence, so I'm sure the influences from your father and from church and religion. I was greatly influenced by missionaries in South Africa, and I'm sure that's left its mark with you as well. Then how did you go into policing? That's a pretty dramatic jump.
Yeah, it's. I've always liked to help people.
I
enjoyed the film industry. My wife and I want to start a family. Film industry work is up and down. You know, you're either busy or you're not, and we want something stable. I enjoy a changing environment, and I said, if I enjoy helping people and I like challenges, I feel like the police world's the way to go. So we did some research and found Raleigh and said, hey, that's a good spot. Let's try this. And
mm-hmm.
That's how I became a cop.
I think if I hadn't become a chef, I would have pursued police work as well, but one profession was enough.
Yeah.
One apprenticeship was enough, put it that way. But I've always had a sense of protecting people myself, so it's just something I've done innately. But give us the story about the turning point in your life. I was particularly touched by what you told me then, and also what inspired you to write and create Bragg and East.
Well, what happened to me when I was, I said I joined the police department because I wanted to help people. I asked the department to give me the hardest area they got, and they gave me Bragg and East, which is one of the first. It was the first.
Oh, you
beat
asked
I got.
For that? Okay.
Yeah, I said, I want the hardest area. I like a challenge. Everything that I was taught as a cop was to arrest, mm-hmm. and I would arrest, and they'd be back on the street doing the exact same thing I just arrested them for.
Right.
And I started getting hardened. I started saying, I feel like I'm not helping anyone because they're not learning. It's just the same thing over and over again. At that same point, my personal life started getting kind of rough. My daughter was getting very sick. She was having fevers up to 106.
Oh, my goodness.
And we were in and out of the hospital. She was up here at Chapel Hill at the hospital, and they start throwing words like leukemia at us.
Mm.
And so I'd be up here trying to sleep in the hospitals up here in Chapel Hill, and I'd be back down on Bragg Street trying to work and fighting crime and arresting people and being hated and spit at and cussed at and everything else. And I just didn't – I was like, God, this is not why I joined this department. This is not what I wanted out of life.
Yeah.
And then I got called to a Code Blue. Code Blue is where someone's under distress. And I was the first one who rolled up on scene. It was right on Bragg Street. And I run up to the house, and I knock on the door. And the door swings open, and there's a lady there hunched over. And she turns and looks at me and hands me her six-week-old baby and says, save my baby's life. And as a cop, we have to suppress our emotions.
No doubt.
We can't let our emotions dictate what we're doing. And first thing that pops in my head is my daughter in the hospital.
Of course.
And we did everything to try to save the child's life, and the child passed away.
Oh.
So here I am as cop. I've now suppressed. I got to become investigator. What happened? I have to go speak to the neighbor. And the neighbor was not concerned at all of the child. Was more concerned about the woman having to use her phone to call 911.
Good Lord.
And so after everything was done, I drove down to this little corner kind of away, and I just had a breaking point in life. And I was like, God.
And you said the child died in your arms, which is intense unto itself. Wow.
And I just said, why? Why is there such hatred? I don't understand. And I felt like I was being spoken to, and that how can you expect someone to give something they never received? And that was unconditional love. And so from that day forward, I made the mission to start sowing unconditional love into those who hated me. And since then, the success stories and my calling for life and the job has flourished. Prostitutes have stopped me and said, thank you for just caring about me. You have motivated me to call my mom. She's coming to pick me up. They're taking me to rehab. You'll never see me again. Drug dealers are trying to lay their drugs down. Just people call me up. Some of these hardened criminals would call me up. Hey, Wags, I don't know what to do. I feel like I'm about to kill myself. I don't know what else to do with life, and here I am on my days off trying to meet them over at the hospital just to try to get them the appropriate help they need. And I'm starting to see that change in the lives.
Fantastic.
And it all started with actually showing them something beyond just a heavy hand.
Rising from the ashes yourself.
Yes, sir.
Just because I can understand how those walls are closing on you. Whew. Well, this makes me even more intent on seeing that film. And, of course, and that's already sowing a good seed on its own. So you have my heartfelt thanks, and I'm sure that of the public, for being a police officer.
Thank you, sir.
And I think we're going to take that note and go to some music, kick back for a minute, and we'll be back shortly.
You're tuned to 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, Carrboro. Están escuchando a 103.FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, Carrboro. Thanks for listening to our station.
Family. They're the values that make America strong and what our armed forces are fighting to defend. While many talk about these ideals without action, they are just empty words. If you think America's military families deserve more, log on to thanksusa.org. It's a great way to thank our troops and give military families the gift of education. thanksusa.org. Scholarships for America's military families. You can make a difference.
You're listening to Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater. I'd like to tell you that your host Claudio is available as a poet with a one-man band for house concerts, performing original and traditional literary readings. Claudio is well known as a classical poet and a master storyteller. His website is claudioarts.com. Now back to Claudio.
Okay, well, this isn't Claudio. This is Bob Crowley, because I wanted to jump
in. I thought
in
that wasn't me.
No, it's not you. I mean, just to be sure here. But I figured I'd jump in, because I've been quiet this whole time and haven't said anything. I've got one Hemingway
just
question.
Busting at the seams, ain't you, boy?
Did you catch any fish that day?
We were just fishing, thank you.
Yeah. But actually,
what a good line, actually.
Actually, if everybody's real hungry for more Claudio, we just did an album of your poems and stories, backed up with some jazz music, and it's available on iTunes and probably Google Play and 100 other places here, because we put it up on a service that spreads it all across the country.
It's called TuneCore, and yep. The album is called A Wind in the Veils, as in the veils we all put on.
Yeah,
later.
It's beautiful stuff. I mean, it's all original stuff, and I designed the cover.
That's right. And don't you forget it. If I get in trouble, I'm coming after you.
Absolutely. But other than that, I don't have a heck of a lot to say. Apex Arts Council is here supporting you and being one of your underwriters and doing all the stuff that we do and the wonderfulness of ourselves and you and whatever comes together. And I'm just in awe of Rob and, and his work. I love the stuff he's done that I've seen. So
absolutely.
I'll pass it back to you.
And, of course, on that note, I'd better acknowledge my underwriter, the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham, because I know some of those ears are listening going, when's he going to talk about us? Well, I just did, bro. And, of course, the Apex Arts Council out of Apex. So I've got support in Durham. I've got support in Apex. I need to come up with somebody local. So if anybody is interested in supporting Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, please contact me at claudioarts.com or WCOM in general. Would appreciate that. I'm going to go back to Rob. Rob wants to fill us in some more about the film Bragg and East.
Absolutely. And one thing I'll say real quick about both films that I found very powerful and why it was great to be able to work on both at the same time is that they both are about a protagonist, a main character who is kind of being broken down by the community he's living in. In this case, you know, No Child, it's got, you know, the college world of partying and trying to pursue maybe a corporate job that isn't right for him. And with Bragg and East, of course, the community, the people he has to, you know, to arrest, and who don't, and that being his only role in their lives, they hate him, possibly. But in both cases, it's the community that brings him back up, too. So
right.
Brother John's a very important character in Bragg and East, who gives him the inspiration to, you know, the words that click that make him, that's transformative for him. And with Will, it's actually one of his imaginary characters that's one of the powerful forces, which is Hemingway, played by Claudio. Is the most transformative. In fact, your scene, you've got a very climatic scene, beautifully shot with light, you know, ricocheting off the lake.
All right.
And you say these words that just resonate, and I know the audience is going to just really feel the click in the back of their brains, so I'm really excited about that.
Thanks. You always tend to know that something's going to work out when you're feeling good about it at the time you're doing it,
and that
magic was there.
Absolutely. Yeah. But to jump back to Bragg and East real quick, something neat about being a director is now directors do this, but I love to get into the location scouting element.
Mm-hmm, and of course.
So Robert
Which
Wagner,
the public rarely hears about, so please.
Yeah. And Robert Wagner took us to Bragg and East to look at places that all kinds of places that open up their homes, their stores for us to possibly film in. And so he took us around on tour, and I was amazed by how it's been about 4 years since his own personal transformative experience, as he's described it to me. But in that time, I've just seen where it's at now. And people come out of the woodwork just to come up and hug him and say hi to him.
That's
and high-five
incredible.
Him. And they just volunteer it. It's not, you know, no one's prompting them. They want to come out and show their appreciation.
Check
for what he's doing in the community. So that was, for me, that was really inspirational.
No doubt. That's fantastic. And congratulations for pulling that off. And it's the what I was referring to earlier, saying rising from the ashes. You know, you get so down on the fact that, why isn't this working? What have you got me here for, Lord? And then eventually you actually become the spark that ignites the community to where they start pulling themselves together, and then they lift you up. I love the beauty of that. And I think that carries over into No Child as well, on many different levels. Give us some contact information here in case any folks want to touch base or find out more for themselves. Will, you first.
So for Will and for the Project No Child, currently we do not have a webpage set up per se. But we are keeping regular updates on Rob Underhill Productions on Facebook. And very soon we'll be setting up a webpage and its own Facebook. But you can get queued in there if you want to get on there and like Rob Underhill Productions. It's good for me too, of course.
Of course,
but,
as it should be.
It'll also give
you the work,
updates on all these projects, including Bragg and East. And it's a segue into all the projects that I'm working on, including Bragg and East in this one.
Right.
So there's that. And then, of course, I'll let Robert speak to contact information for Bragg and East and a little bit more about the project.
Absolutely. Take the mic.
For Bragg and East, you can go to www.bragg, B-R-A-G-G, the letter N, as in Nora, East, EAST.com. You can also find us on Facebook, / Bragg and East, and you can also get us on Twitter.
Do you have an email?
And we do have an email. You can email me directly at robert@bragganeast.com, or general information would be bragganeast@gmail.com.
Fantastic. And what's the story on that particular film, Bragg and East? What's happening with it? I'll let Rob take the mic.
Sure. I'll say a little bit, then I'm going to let Robert take over because he's got a really strong sense of where this is going. But
give us the teaser, yes.
Sure, yeah. So we've got a complete Right now, the running time is about 23 minutes. It's about, you know, half an hour TV length, mm-hmm. which is great for a to serve as a pilot. And also, of course, it'll circulate as a short film in film festivals. We are looking to represent it at the Cannes Film Festival. So in May, we look to be taking it with us to take it to that market.
Fantastic. And from what I'm gathering, you're hoping to make this a series.
Either a series or turn it into a feature film. We do have the script for the feature
Fantastic.
Film. And the concept for the series is all underway. But I'd love to have Robert talk about the how the community will become involved in this, how it will become a Riley
Fantastic.
Production.
Yes, I want to hear that too.
So what we want to do is, you know, with the film is, you know, I would, if we can get a television series out of this, I'd prefer to do that because it'd be more sustainable work. But this
and you
is,
could add things to it as time goes by. Yeah.
Exactly. I can get more stories and right. really build up what it's about. But it's more than just a film. It's a community effort. The idea is, you know, I talked to a lot of these guys that were gang members, drug dealers, that feel like they have no hope, they have no opportunity, they have nothing that they can do. They've got felonies on their records. No one will hire them. So what our goal with the project is that we would be able to come in and hire these people and work with them, and they would actually help us make the film right there within their own community. At the same time, they're being mentored, they're getting off the streets, they're getting the ability to work on something, they're getting motivated. Same time, we'll give them job training and work with them to get full-time employment. That's why a television series would be best, because it's more about a community effort
yes.
Than it is just the film itself. It's a ministry.
And it can reveal an ongoing saga as opposed to limited to one production.
Exactly, exactly.
And there's always, God, there's always more coming from the streets. You never know what it's going to be.
That's right.
Well, I think it's getting really close for us to wrap up, so give us the contact info one more time, everybody, and then I'm going to bring the show to a close. I loved having you guys on. I'm really proud of the work you're doing, Robert, all of you. Rob,
you.
Rob, Will. And so give us that contact information one more time, and we'll wind it down.
All right, for Bragg and East, it's www.bragg, B-R-A-G-G, the letter N is in Nora, East, EAST.com. You can also find us on Facebook, / Bragg and East, or at Bragg and East on Twitter.
And for No Child and other productions, because, of course, I'm Raleigh-based, and a lot of our productions are Raleigh, Triangle, Chapel Hill, Durham.
And you never know what this guy's going to come up with
never
next.
Never know what's going to happen, yeah. And so keep up with what we're doing, because we're doing really wonderful things. We love to have the community involved. You can get most up-to-date information at facebook.com/ Rob Underhill Productions. You can also see more about my work at robunderhill.com. And like I said, very soon we'll have more information about connecting directly to No Child, and we hope to have a preview screening for that in the next couple of months.
Fantastic. And Will, I guess, is there anything you wanted to add to this?
Yeah, I actually want to comment on Bragg and East and listening to Robert here today. I think his story is just phenomenal, and everything I've listened to today, you can tell his heart is really in this, and I'm very inspired by it.
I would say the same thing. I'm really glad, proud that you brought him to my show, and thank you guys for being here. You've been listening to director Rob Underhill, executive producer Will Williams, and executive producer Robert Wagner, both also star in their own films. And of course, yours truly, Claudia, who played Hemingway in No Child, with these guys and loved every minute of it. We were talking about the film No Child and Bragg and East. Thank you guys for joining Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, and consider yourself part of the family at this point, so this will be ongoing.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's been a pleasure. Rocco, thank you for your fine work. You too, Bob, for being the foil. And
always
you
a
folks
pleasure.
For listening.
Always a pleasure, Claudio.
Until next time. Cheers.